Welcome to the Playlist Podcast. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of The Playlist. And for this discussion, I'm joined by Mike D'Angelo, the host of many, many things on The Playlist, as well as Rodrigo Perez, editor-in-chief of the website. Welcome to 2024, guys. Are you both having a lovely New Year's already?
Heck yeah, man.
Well, it's funny, Mike, that you say that because I live in Milwaukee, as do you. And I'm currently looking at -3 degrees outside with a feels like temperature of -27. So
post snowstorm.
Oh, it's so miserable here. I don't know what it's like in Brooklyn for you, Rodrigo, but yeah.
It's cold, but it's obviously relatively cold because it's nothing that like you guys have much worse, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've used my snowblower 5 times in the past, like, 36
Same.
Hours.
Same. Yeah. And I went to the grocery store and it's like ice skating because there's about an inch of ice in the parking lots. So yeah, fun times. Anyway, enough about that. We're having a lovely 2024 already, as you can tell. And what we're going to do with this episode is we're going to, this is actually part one of a 2-part discussion where we're going to talk about our most anticipated films and TV shows of the upcoming year. And for this part of the discussion, we're just going to narrow it down to our top films that we're most anticipating. And then in the next part, we'll talk about TV. What we're going to do is, instead of just rehashing the Playlist expansive most anticipated films of 2024 list, we're going to just come up with our own personal choices, talk about why we think they're the films that we're most anticipating and will likely have an impact in the new year. But again, if you want to read kind of a very long list of just about all the movies coming out in 2024, we've got that for you. I think it's at least 100, right, Rodrigo?
It's 100 on that list. Yep. And 100 proper, and then there's honorable mentions, and honestly, like, I could keep updating it all. I have updated a little bit, and there feels like a bunch of things keep being added, and actually maybe even being subtracted too, which we could talk about. But yeah, it's big, it's long, and then I think we did another like 20, almost 30 films in blockbuster stuff, just because I had so much left over that I thought I'll do something with it.
So before we break down our list, I want to tell you the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes Deep Focus, The Discourse, Binge-Worthy, and more. And if you want to find us, check us out on the podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find your favorite shows. Okay, guys. So we're going to hype up the movies, but instead of us like kind of talking about 10 movies each, we're going to break it down a little bit more, narrow it down, I should say, a little bit more. So Mike, let's start with you. How about you give us, of your most anticipated, about 5 or so honorable mentions, films that you think are going to be awesome, but maybe not kind of top in your list.
My honorable mentions, you said, let's start with. Okay. Well, I mean, since we're only doing probably like our top 3 faves, I will say the ones that didn't necessarily make that are still like super anticipated for me, like Furiosa, which I in any other day, you know, it could swap out and be, you know, number one. It looks fantastic. Deadpool 3 is definitely up there. Alien Romulus. There's just so much. And I, you know how much of a disaster movie like sucker I am, Charles. Mm-hmm. So Twisters, especially the fact that Lee Isaac Chung is doing it. It's like, what the hell is going on here? And all the press has been really like confusing as far as like what this movie is. But, you know, still, I remember, you know, walking into a theater when I was a kid and seeing just that giant cardboard stand up of Twister and that giant tornado in the distance. You're just like, holy crap. And that was like a formative movie for me in my childhood. So I can't help but be excited for that.
I think we've talked about Twister at least a half dozen times in discussions. I stand on record that it might be the best cast of any of those like disaster movies by a long shot.
Really?
I mean,
good. Yeah.
It has Todd Field in a supporting acting role. Like, that's just nuts.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman just kind of being amazing.
I would argue is maybe his best performance ever. Just for line reads. Boy. I mean, it's incredible.
the extreme
I gotta say, I Alien Romulus of those is one I'm super excited for. Fede Alvarez is fucking great, so
yeah, his Evil Dead's really good.
Yeah, well, not even that, like, I mean, he's even his Don't Breathe is really good. The ending's bonkers, but the movie's good. Anything out of those, Rodrigo, you want to talk about?
It's all good stuff. I mean, I did my list a little bit differently, I think, from you guys, but you know, we can talk about that when we get to me. But yeah, I mean, you know, actually maybe the film that I'm most interested on Mike's list is actually Deadpool 3, because I'm very curious as to like I did my list basically like as into like what I'm most intrigued about, which is different than most anticipating. So like I'm intrigued by what that is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. What does Disney meets Deadpool
yeah,
mean?
I'm like,
what does Sean Levy bring to this?
About all that. Whereas like Nosferatu, I know what Robert Evers is going to give me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I have a pretty good idea about it. I think and like a lot of the things on your list, I have a pretty good idea, I think, of what they're going to be. So to me, the ones that are on my list are more like, I don't know what that is. And that sort of fascinates me. You know what I mean?
Mm. Can we talk about one that I saw on your list, Mike, that you probably would say is an honorable mention, but yeah. I'm curious what you guys think personally, because Horizon parts 1 and 2, yeah. This is Kevin Costner's like passion project that apparently he's got secretive funding for. It's like
that
hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
What do you guys, as people who watched Yellowstone, what do you guys think about that?
Okay, put down the derogatory tone when you speak of Yellowstone around us. Kevin Costner, you know, back in the 90s, put out some really outstanding Westerns and Western performances, kind of classics in the genre. So to hear that he's got an idea that he wants to spread over 2 movies in this, like, epic storytelling kind of thing, and he'd leave Yellowstone for it, and you know, all these different, it could either be like Water World 2 disaster, or could be like outstanding. So either way, I'm
the post
here for that.
Kind of like forgettable, like, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Is there any shot that this movie or these movies catch on?
No.
yeah, it's probably pretty niche.
Well, I know the newest reports are saying that he wants 4 of them.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're going to come and go. And I think it was a dumb move of him. And I think while Yellowstone is not what it was, I think he's best in Sheridan's hands. I think Sheridan is while he's spread thin and all that stuff, like, you know, I'm kind of bummed that like Yellowstone is not going to end the way it was intended, which was probably like 2 more seasons of like getting the right arc of the Duttons and trying to end that well. And now it's going to have to be, who knows how they're even going to have to do it, because they have to like agree to like how to shoot it and write it. And then he's got to sort of like agree to his death, but not really, because he doesn't have any say, but he's still under contract. It's going to be a mess. It's I'm bummed, because it was a pretty interesting show at first. And, and now he's doing this thing that, I don't know, man.
Like nobody asked for, right? Like, I'm not crazy. When this was announced, I was like, who wants this?
Yeah.
It could be good. And, you know, there is a giant, massive audience for Yellowstone. So if they show up for it, then who's to say he won't get 3 and 4?
That's true. That's true. We'll see. Anyway, I just, when I looked at your list of like honorable mentions, I'm like, I'm not surprised that you would put that up there, because I know that you have like affinity for his like 90s work and Yellowstone, but I just am surprised that anybody's like greatly anticipating it.
I'm just kind of like Rodrigo was saying, I'm really intrigued by what the hell it is, because we don't know anything about it other than, you know, this hype that he's kind of put out there.
Yeah. So I want to skip Rodrigo now, because like you said, your list is a little different. I want to get to my kind of quick honorable mentions here, because they're very different and somewhat silly. I want to mention Electric State by the Russo brothers. I don't think anybody's talking about this movie, but the basis for it is this artist that's really interesting. And he kind of, well, it's the guy who did Tales from the Loop, I believe. The original art, not the show. And so it's this weird, like, retro futuristic mixed sci-fi mixed with kind of like everyday life. So I'm kind of interested to see where that goes. And I, call me crazy, I still think the Russos have one good movie in them, right?
I think the Russos,
I mean,
cool. I like what happens to anybody. They got, they thought they were like, you know, they had the Midas touch after all the Marvel films, and they certainly, everybody certainly bought in, because look at the budgets that they've had and the scale and the casts of all those things, but none of those films have turned out.
No. Yeah, they seem like really great guys. I think that's why they're able to get those casts, and like all those Marvel guys just loved working with them. And talk about, like, you know, building relationships. Just having the cast of Endgame, you know, on a first name basis is pretty awesome. Some other movies quickly, Ballerina, just because I love John Wick, and the fact that they hired Lynn Weissman to do this is just bonkers to me. So
that's what kept it off my list.
but talk about intrigued. I'm like, wow, like, okay. I you know, 2000 Charles is like, yeah, the guy who did Underworld. But yeah, we'll see. Roadhouse, just because it's maybe top five of my favorite movies of all time, the original, and the fact that Doug Liman and Jake Gyllenhaal are doing it is just, I gotta see what that's all about. And
I'm more concerned than intrigued about that one, just
I think I am too. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like they got what made it great.
No,
just the short pieces we've seen.
But Mike, JD Pardo, we're here for him.
Fine.
Let's do it. The Bike Riders, again, because because of Mayans and Sons of Anarchy, I'm like really obsessed with motorcycle culture. So that looks interesting. And Jeff Nichols is great. And I mean, the cast is superb.
Jeff Nichols always makes good films. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And then kind of an outlier is Love Lies Bleeding, just because I love Saint Maud and I'm here for anything Rose Glass does now. But just, I watched the trailer for that and it looks really, really great. Yeah. So yeah. Rodrigo. Let's talk. Give us a few of yours that you're most intrigued about, but maybe not most intrigued, like your honorable mentions.
Well, I only put I didn't do an honorable mention list. I just did I got like six or seven on there. And it's, I'm just intrigued about stuff like, I don't know what Paul Schrader's doing. I'm intrigued about the fact that Luca Guadagnino might have two films this year, you know, and Trey Edward Schultz is doing a movie with The Weeknd that's supposed to be rumored to be a remake of Stephen King.
Misery, right?
Yeah. Misery. And based off of an idea of The Weeknd, and we already know what happened with the idea of The Weeknd with The Idol, and that turned into a hot mess. So this could be another hot mess. And
can we talk about that for a second? Because when this was originally announced, it was before The Idol, and everybody's like, "Hey, Trey Edward Schultz is great. Maybe he sees something in The Weeknd that we're all crazy about." And then I forget who else is like supporting in that cast,
Jenna Ortega.
Yeah. Who's like maybe the hottest young actress working today. So like,
I think it's him, and I think it's like, it's Misery with her and him in the female male roles.
That's right. But then The Idol comes out and everybody's like, The Weeknd is maybe the worst actor of all time. And then, and then we have the Stephen King of it all. Now it's like, can Trey Edward Schultz like do something good with this? Cause
well,
it almost.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, my list is also, I'm intrigued by, like, you know, it's not necessarily what the most anticipated. It's like, I'm is this going to be a hot mess? I'm sort of interested, you know?
This is the one where I'm like, it could be really great and surprising, or it could be just The Idol Part 2.
Yeah, Edward Schultz is a great filmmaker, you know? He's really good shit. And he's apparently got, like, two films that he's done. He's done another secret film on top of it.
It's weird. Maybe I'm crazy, but is this like another, like the last year or so we've seen a lot of these like secret productions, which is kind of cool because Luca Guadagnino also, because I guess he rested on Champions for a while, so he had time to
Champions is done. Champions was going to come out in August. It was ready. Almost came out in August and then it got pulled last minute because of the strike, so it's ready. But he's also shot Queer and he works fast, and he had two films, if not out, at least two films out during film festivals last, like a year or two ago.
Right.
So he's done it before. And Champions is in the bag. It's done. So he doesn't have to deal with it. Like it's coming out in April. So basically from August till now, when, you know, Champions is on the shelf, is ready to go. He's been editing and working on Queer. Yeah. And so that's you know, an adaptation of William S. Burroughs, and it's
is that Daniel Craig or am I crazy?
Yeah, Daniel Craig stars in it, and Daniel Craig is essentially playing the queer William S. Burroughs character.
Right.
So that's big game changer for Daniel Craig, and the way Guadagnino works, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correct.
Yeah.
I think he'll have it ready for. I'm not saying it's going to be there, but I think he'll have it ready for Venice. So it could premiere at Venice, if, and that's where he typically premieres his movie. So it's, I think there's a pretty good shot about that, which is just kind of fascinating. The idea that like his tennis sex comedy is done and he's got another thing in the bag, and it's kind of crazy.
And I'm crazy because I Call Me By Your Name didn't really resonate with me, but his Bones and All, it was one of my favorites what was that, 2 years ago now? And Suspiria. Suspiria. I fucking loved his Suspiria. Yeah, so yeah. I'm excited for everything he does. Anything else, Rodrigo, you want to just quickly mention before we dive a little deeper?
Quickly, just that Guy Ritchie's probably going to have two films out this year, or at least he'll probably be ready. And I'm fascinated by people who work fast. Like,
yeah.
So that's
and a series.
Yeah. And a series. That's right. And then you've got Joseph Kaczynski, who's trying to do Formula One with Brad Pitt, what he did for Fighter Planes and Tom Cruise for Top Gun. So that's interesting. Paul Schrader's back and doing something very different apparently from what he's been doing, which is interesting. And then
Jacob Elordi's in that. Oh, I'm sorry, go.
Yeah. And then just finally, Lynn Ramsey's got a film that's apparently done, although I know some people have been reporting that it hasn't been shot, but she said in a Variety piece that she shot it and that it was shot last summer with Joaquin Phoenix and Rooney Mara. So unless she was misquoted, she shot it already, so it should be ready. So, but we'll see. I don't know.
And as I've said in many articles about Lynn Ramsey, whenever a new movie from her comes out, and it's a rare thing, it's every like what, 5-6 years, you make a day of it, you go and you see it in theaters.
Oh, for sure.
Was no you matter. Never really hear the last one?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Wow. Also, she's got a lot of stuff in the can, or not in the can, but it sounds like she's got about 3 or 4 projects that are, like, you know, she's usually like very infrequent, and it sounds like more like in the next few years we may see like 2 or 3 films with her, but in maybe like 5 or 6 years or something. So that would
be it sounds like what happened was You Were Never Really Here debuted, it was a big hit, and she got like seduced a little bit by big studio movies that just kind of crashed and burned and took a lot of her time.
But everybody loves her, and like, so Jennifer Lawrence is going to do a movie with her, and you know, wow. Joaquin and Rooney Mara, and then there's another one that she's got, I think, with maybe Julianne Moore. I don't. She's got a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. That's happening.
Cool. So I do want to mention the Joseph Kaczynski thing. I don't know if you guys are sports people. I know Mike watches football and whatnot, but Formula One is like at an all-time high in popularity right now, partially because of the Netflix series that have been happening, like the docuseries.
Yeah.
So that movie, I think people need to watch out for. That could be a huge hit. Isn't that, that's Brad Pitt, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's also Apple. That. So, but then again, Apple's been doing a lot of stuff theatrically. So it could be like a Napoleon, but bigger, you know?
Yeah.
Like something that gets, Sony's probably going to release it. It'll probably get a big like summer release, and if it's ready, actually it's not dated, so I don't know, but it, yeah, you know, Apple's going to get behind it. And but then again, Apple was behind Killers of the Flower Moon, and apparently I didn't realize that Killers of the Flower Moon got like a massive wide opening, but then
quickly
shrank because, like, you know, people just didn't, it's a different kind of film, you know?
Yeah this has the, like you were mentioning, Top Gun, I think, is a much better comparable pick to it.
Oh, he's basically said, I'm trying to do what I did to Top Gun for Formula One.
Cool. Let's go back to actually, I'm going to skip you, Mike, because I think we have a lot more to talk about your top three. But I want to go through some of my top ones here in a little bit more detail. Rebel Ridge.
I'm glad you brought that one up.
This movie, Jeremy Saulnier has Blue Ruin and Green Room are two of my favorite movies. And I've been waiting for this movie a long time. I was excited when John Boyega was attached. There's all the drama about what happened between him and John Boyega, which led to Boyega walking away from this movie. But just because he's been gone a while, and we still are excited about this, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you said, Green Room's fantastic.
Have you seen Blue Ruin?
I didn't hear about the drama. Oh yeah, Blue Ruin's great.
Okay, good. Just making sure, because I think Blue Ruin's like one of the. It's not like his technical feature debut, but it's basically his breakout movie. It's really good.
Yeah.
And also, I want to mention the Speak No Evil remake. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks this is going to be great. Rodrigo, did you watch the original Speak No Evil last year, 2 years ago now?
I don't think I did.
Oh, man. It is a, what was it? I think it's
highly
Danish.
Disturbing.
Yeah, it's so good. And it's one of those movies that left my jaw on the floor. And the fact that Blumhouse bought the rights to do an English remake of it, that's all well and good. James Watkins is a serviceable director, a Blumhouse type director. That's fine. But the fact that it has Mackenzie Davis and why am I blanking on his name?
Professor X, right?
Yeah, Professor X. McAvoy.
James McAvoy?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah, that film. That I'm intrigued by that because of the cast, yeah.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say. I don't see them going nearly as hardcore as the original, especially with the ending. And that's what intrigues me most about it, is without the ending, I don't know how this movie works, but we'll see.
Yeah, there was a lot of swearing at you via text for recommending that one to me.
Yeah, it was awesome. I love recommending really disturbing movies to people that aren't expecting it. And then I want to mention Maxine.
Yeah,
there's a negative report that just came out because apparently, allegedly, Mia Goth is getting sued for you know, kicking a guy in the head. But this movie, come on now, Pearl and X were fantastic. This movie's got to be great.
Yeah, I was really into both of those. So and this one's like super glammed out, like LA 80s, isn't it?
Yeah. And like, I think it's like continuing with the kind of the porn thing, the like skeezy porn thing from X, which I think is super fascinating, which you don't see a lot in mainstream movies. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely falls into like the intrigue of like, you know, him making a trilogy within the span of like 2 or 3 years. It's pretty fast, or two or something like that. It's pretty interesting.
Here's what I'm interested about is he made Pearl and X in a vacuum, right? Like nobody was expecting these movies. And then now the world is looking at for Maxine. And so I'm curious if that informed any of the storytelling or maybe the budget, or I don't know, the griminess of the first two. So.
Well, she's going to be a big star. I think she's really.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
she stops kicking people in the head, apparently.
Allegedly. here's what I'll say about her. If you guys haven't seen Infinity Pool, no matter what you think of the movie, her great performance in that is bonkers and great. So
yeah,
check
she
that
commits
out.
Really, really hard.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And her voice is just perfect for that. And for this as well. And then lastly, I'll just say Havoc by Gareth Evans, just because I'll watch anything that man does.
I talked to Timothy Oliphant about that one, and he was describing like how Gareth shoots and like, you know, basically pre-plans everything and pre-shoots everything. That way, every shot, they're just putting together a puzzle. And he says it's the easiest thing in the world. I'm like, I would not have guessed that Gareth makes an easy action film to shoot, but apparently they're very, very easy to shoot on the actors.
Wow.
Yeah, but the problem with that one is that one's a big question mark because it's been done for forever. And
yeah, it finished filming in like 2022, right?
Yeah. And,
a while
and
ago.
It's delayed for a reason, and apparently it's not great, and there's a lot of questions about it. And I think Netflix has it. I think they're
they
like,
do.
I think they're just going to like dump it out one day.
Which
I mean,
is a bummer because
either way, right?
What?
I said they would have either way, right?
Well, yeah. But that's what they did with Apostle too, right? Like,
yeah,
bummer. Okay, Mike, your top three, I think we all are in agreement on.
Definitely.
But I'll let you talk about them.
Yeah, number one, Nosferatu. Robert Eggers. Yeah. What else is there to say? I mean, every little still that is released, I'm just like devouring and, you know, fascinated by, and, you know, hearing Willem Dafoe tease it out, and, you know, all these different things that people have been saying about it. It just, and he's been so, this is like his passion project. For how long has he been trying to get Nosferatu made?
Yeah.
So
I'll say this about Nosferatu. I hope it's nice and weird. Like, like,
I think I hope you're guaranteed that.
Horror movie's cool, but like, I want a horror movie with some like strange quirks. Like, do a horror movie with like some Poor Things to it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Mm.
like fuck it up a little bit. Like, don't just do, like, I think with the cast, I think it could be really intriguingly weird. I'm hoping.
I mean, look at his other movies.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to get weird with it, he's going to do it.
Yeah. Cause even something as simple as like The Northman, which is like just a straight up simple revenge tale. He got really weird with it too.
For sure.
And However, The Lighthouse, obviously.
Also, does anyone feel like this is a Christmas movie? Like, does anyone have a bit of a concern that a Nosferatu Robert Eggers movies with essentially no stars and, you know, not the stars that he intended to make it with that would have made it a bigger film. And now his leads are not names at all. And it's going to be released on Christmas Day, 2024. Like, that's a little
that
odd.
That was shocking to me because it seemed as if it was destined for like the first half of the year.
Needed to be an October release, probably.
Well, I mean, I think he would have been fine in the summer too. His movies are a little different, I think.
The problem is that they slotted it in because they lost Jordan Peele's movie. Jordan Peele's movie was supposed to come out then, but Jordan Peele's movie never shot. So they just stuck that in that date so they wouldn't lose it. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping that they maybe change it and put something else there and put it in October, like you said, like around Halloween. Like, I don't know. That doesn't seem like a movie that's like, it seems to me even less commercial than The Northman. And The Northman only did like, you know, I think it failed to hit 100 million.
My thing about that too, that I could see them moving it forward, is the fact that this is almost guaranteed to make a film festival debut. Mm-hmm. And so depending on where it lands, I don't know that you could have this like, say, go to Venice at the end of the summer and then just sit on it for 4 months. What do you think about that, Rodrigo? You're more in touch with like the idea of like a festival release.
Well, if it sticks on a Christmas date, I don't think they will put it at a festival.
Really?
I cannot remember the last time a movie came out at that date and premiered at a film festival first. Like,
Ferrari didn't Boys in the Boat do a festival?
No, I don't think Boys in the Boat did.
And
no?
Ferrari's a much smaller film.
Okay. True.
And yes, it did come out on the same day, like it was a Christmas day, but it's a neon smaller film. This is like, I mean, it's Focus Features, but it's still Universal. I don't know. Maybe you may be right. Maybe they're going the more Ferrari route and it's maybe be a little bit more low key, but I don't know. Focus Features, Universal, they tend to aim a little bit higher. They, I don't know.
Maybe that date is an awards push, you know, because a lot of people just throw it there because they want to get it out at the end of the year to make sure that they can push it.
I mean, they've pushed awards stuff for Eggers before and it just doesn't translate. Like, yeah, they did that with The Lighthouse.
This is a weird date, and I think we need to keep an eye on it and see what happens, because I have all the confidence in the world in the film. I don't have a lot of confidence as a big Christmas Day kind of film, unless they're going for like a kind of Ferrari, like it'll have legs kind of vibe. But I don't know, man.
I laugh because I'm just imagining like Christmas Day. You're like, let's get the family, let's go see Nosferatu. Like,
I will bet money if they stick with this date, I don't think we'll see it at a film festival first. I could be wrong, but
Just seems like it's one of those that just screams like Venice or something. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Normally, yeah. What would make more sense is Venice and then October.
Right. You know? Right.
So let's see what happens with the date if it sticks, but. Otherwise, okay. It's the sort of like the weird question mark about it.
Mike, I want to skip ahead and get to one that I just want to, I think we should all just briefly talk about, Dune Part 2.
That's a lock for me.
Yeah, that's coming soon. It's going to be good. I don't think we have any doubts about that, right?
No.
No.
Yeah.
It's good. It's that. I mean, it's slightly weird in that it was done last year and I feel like they could almost save it again for the fall, but you know, March is a pretty good date. So it's fine, I guess. It's just, I don't know. I feel like it could have been like a bigger, I mean, it was intended for the fall, right? Maybe it'll do like good numbers, but March is also, I don't know.
I'm interested to see how it performs because, you know, the first one came out in the middle of COVID. And it had like a hybrid, like, release. So
yeah, and it still did really
made pretty
well.
Good money.
It did over 400 million.
And also it's had so much time to build over on streaming where people watched it. And so there's probably a big audience for it. Yeah.
Do we see this crossing like 500 million? I think Legendary definitely thinks it will, but it's just wild to me, being a fan of the book, to think that Dune could be like a legit like Marvel sized blockbuster. But you know,
it's just my only that's sort of my question. Like, I feel like Dune feels like a movie that could hit 500, 600 million in it in its proper, especially since the first one did 400 during COVID. And, you know, but when was the last time a March movie did like over 500 million, other than like, I think BBS was released in March?
They kept pushing the summer earlier and earlier and earlier. And yeah, now people think like March or spring break is like a blockbuster time, but I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the quality of this movie, I think, is indisputable. Yeah. I think we're going to
never underestimate Timothée Chalamet's draw on the ladies.
Right. Right. I think Wonka this weekend just went over 500 million.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I mean, that's just bananas. I don't think anybody saw that.
Wow.
I saw it.
No, I meant saw the performance coming.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I have not seen Wonka, but I'm sure it's fine. Mike, the last movie I skipped over, I want to talk about, because I think this was one that you and Rodrigo both agreed on.
Yeah, Civil War, Alex Garland. The trailer just looks super intriguing, and Alex Garland has a pretty good track record for me. I haven't loved everything he's done. Obviously, Ex Machina is fantastic. Everyone seemed to really love Annihilation.
I liked
the
it
book
a lot.
A ton better.
Well,
that's just me. But
loved Annihilation.
What's that?
I loved Annihilation.
Did you read the book?
No.
Yeah, I didn't read the book either. I love the movie.
Yeah, that seems to be the distinction.
and Men seems the one that's really started to split people.
Yeah,
and
that's the one that really didn't jive with me.
Well,
so,
and the fact that Devs kind of just came and went.
Devs
is
great, though.
Great, though. Devs
but I'm just saying, like, it kind of just came and went. Like,
well, that's all just because that came out during. I don't think that's a comment on the quality of
no,
it.
No, no, no.
It's a more like, it came out in the glut of like so many streaming options, and people didn't, and it didn't have like a huge cast.
Offerman was kind of the biggest one,
but it's really good.
It is good.
Men was, I, you know, my only issue is people are so like, people got to like love or hate things. There's no, and it's like, Men is like, okay, I get arguments for people who disliked Men, but I also didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was interesting. Had some good ideas, and I don't think it quite came together, but people have turned on him, especially like, I don't know, Twitter people, like, I really turned on him, and now they're like turning on this, and I think this is seemingly it's intriguing. I don't know, people are like, oh, you know, they're kind of like, I don't know, flattening this one and making it seem like it's like some reductive response to politics now, and I suppose it is in a way, but it's like, I don't know, I think it's interesting. It's
yeah, the trailer looks awesome.
My question is, Rodrigo, remind me, what was the name of that Blumhouse movie that got everybody riled up and ended up not being very good?
The Hunt.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm concerned that people are going to, the hype around this movie, when the trailer starts appearing more and the commercials start appearing for this, that people are going to just politicize this from the jump, which obviously this movie invites that. But I'm a bit concerned that the hype could drown out the actual film itself.
Well, yeah, but also The Hunt you got to remember, it sort of kind of came and went.
Right.
And I think that's sort of what's going to happen to this. I think it's actually, to be honest, my gut reaction is that audiences don't want to live and discuss the things that they're living and discussing in the current times. I think they want this film like 10 years from now, not right now.
Right.
Leave the World Behind did really great for Netflix, and that kind of drew some discussion out.
That's
but
different.
Who knows?
That's
it is a little different.
That's at home. That's a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, this movie is like, I think Mike and I said this is The Purge with an auteur director,
the Purge movies have never done like super well, have they?
I mean, they've done for their budgets.
Shots fired at Charles.
Hey, it's real to me, damn it. I'm fascinated by the discussion surrounding this movie. I'm also obviously a fan of the filmmaker, so I'm really interested in seeing what his take on current politics are, extrapolated out to like the nth degree. But I'm just a bit concerned that this is going to be a movie where it's like, what did you think about this movie? And that's going to be like your stance on this movie is going to influence how people think of you. And I'm sick of shit like that.
Yeah. Well, my prediction, honestly, is that it's expensive, it bombs, and it's Garland's last film, because he's already talking that he's already wanting to walk away from filmmaking. And I think he's sort of set up in a way, like almost this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy to walk away from filmmaking. Because I think I'm just really convinced that audiences don't turn out for things like this politically, because it's too close to home. And it's going to bomb, and it's A24's most expensive film, and therefore it's going to push Garland, who says he doesn't want to be a director anymore. It's going to push him to say, oh, well, yeah, I guess I shouldn't. You know what I mean?
I mean, he is a great writer as well. So
he is a great writer.
Well, they've already announced he's going to do, what, 28 years later or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So he is, in a way, like shifting already. I think that's why he wrote it. I think he wrote something really daring that he kind of knew might get rejected, and then he was just kind of like, fuck it. I'm just going to go chips all in, and then I maybe won't filmmake for a while after that, and I'll just write. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
Great. So let's switch gears a little bit, because Rodrigo brought up in our discussion about what we would talk about for this episode, you brought up three projects that kind of surfaced in a real way, real recently, and look like they might be coming out this year. So I'm going to quickly discuss these. Let's start with Maggie Gyllenhaal's Bride of Frankenstein, simply called The Bride. This looks kind of nuts, because it has a really great cast, and it seems like it's all coming together so that it can have kind of perhaps another one of those award season pushes later this year.
Yeah, I mean, anything with Christian Bale is going to have an awards push, probably.
Yeah.
Christian Bale, but it stars Jesse Buckley.
Yeah. Who's great. Speaking of Alex Garland,
an Oscar nominee now, right? Maybe even like two-time or
yeah.
An Oscar nominee now.
Yeah. Wow. A very underrated, seems always on the brink of something huge. What do we think? This is a good move for Gyllenhaal for her second movie.
Is it her second movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least. She's definitely directed one before, right?
Was the one from last year. Last year, 2022.
That was like a while ago. Yeah. And I don't know. I still don't have a sense of it yet. It came so fast. I don't have a sense. And I'm not even sure. Is it coming this year? I'm not sure. But I have, and also if Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein is coming, and that's Netflix, and that's a bigger beast. Don't you think you'd want to, if you're doing a Bride of Frankenstein movie, and you're probably not the size of Netflix, that you'd maybe want to take a beat and wait? So, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. But then there's also, when we talk about twin movies and that whole phenomenon, there are times when it works out really well for everybody. And then there are times where one cancels the other out, or they both cancel each other out. And I don't know. I think obviously Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, which is the next movie I want to talk about, I think that's the bigger quote unquote movie. Even though that, again, kind of lost a cast member with Andrew Garfield kind of having a scheduling conflict or whatever, and not being able to do it. But it seems like this one's going to be equally huge as Shape of Water, and could be another one of those Guillermo del Toro genre movies that rises above and gets him an Oscar nomination consideration.
Yeah, but
it definitely coming out this year.
I think that's like on the bubble about whether that's going to, it's going into production in February. And I think it still feels like it's on the bubble. Like sort of like, we're kind of like, is this going to be 2024? I'm not so sure. Like maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, either way, it's probably going to get that late in the year push, whatever, if it's 2024, 2025. So I don't know. We'll see. And then another movie that's kind of on the bubble as far as release date would be Paul Thomas Anderson's one, which has been rumored now for at least 2 years with Leonardo DiCaprio. now we got confirmation that this is happening. And regardless, what I was going to say is that he never makes like visually VFX heavy movies. So there's still the chance it could make a late in the year push.
Yeah, normally I would say forget it, but he did Licorice Pizza in a really fast timeline. Like he shot Licorice Pizza during COVID in the spring, and it came out in like November, December. So
yeah. Yeah. Do we think this is the PTA movie that's going to really break out? Because the report said this is quote unquote his most commercial project yet. So are we looking 100 million, 200 million? What are we thinking?
Well, apparently it's going to cost 100 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's nuts because, and I don't know, it's too hard to say because we don't really know what it is yet, you know?
Yeah.
But if Leo's attached,
it's rumored to be, a story. If it turns out what I think it is, it's a story that him and his daughter were kicking around for a while, and it's something to do with karate and a little black girl. And I think DiCaprio is supposed to be, if the rumors turn out, that he's like some sort of mentor to this little black girl, and Regina Hall got cast. So now there's thought that Regina Hall might be the mother of this little black girl, but all of that is unconfirmed.
Yeah. And obviously we're all here for a new Paul Thomas Anderson movie, whatever it is, whenever it is.
But that also still sounds like, that doesn't sound like $100 million movie to me.
I mean, it's got Leonardo DiCaprio. He doesn't walk on set without a big payday. So
he might get paid, but is it going to make that much money? That's
Yeah. I don't know. But then again, the thing that a lot of people don't understand, Paul Thomas Anderson loves broad comedy, right? Like one of his favorite movies of all times is Big Daddy. So he could just go full on broad comedy. And
do you think he ever really would, though? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not, you know, that's, I mean, Paul, like, you know, Christopher Nolan likes big broad movies too. It doesn't mean he's going to make one of those.
I know. Right? I'm still waiting for Nolan's MacGruber, but.
Right. So like, it's interesting that they're calling it the most accessible, and it's got Leo, and it costs 100 million. So, but we don't have a real sense of what it is.
Yeah.
It's interesting though. Right. For sure.
Yeah. And just quickly before
there's a rumor that Joaquin's going to be in it.
Right. Ooh. Just before we wrap up, I wanted to mention kind of one that I wanted to put on my list, but got recently pulled completely from the schedule, which is Mickey 17 from Bong Joon-ho. Yeah. What do we think? The report said it was pulled from schedule because the strikes prevented post-production work from really happening and delayed that. And so now he's still working on it. But it's been in the can for a while and it seemed ready to go for, what was that, February or March? February.
It had a March date and March. Then it got pulled and they put Godzilla in it. Well, and there was also a rumor last year that seems to jive with what happened, is that they weren't going to be ready with VFX because of the strikes. So maybe that's just it. Maybe
yeah. And so it could be a lot of much ado about nothing. And we just end up getting it like late summer, early fall or whatever. But you know, that's, I think one that we can all agree is obviously one of our most anticipated, most intriguing.
For sure. Because Pattinson and especially after his Nolan films, he's kind of a much bigger name now.
And Batman.
And yeah, the Batman and Bong Joon-ho, but I'm thinking maybe now that they pulled it off the schedule completely, maybe that means they're going to push it for the whole year. Like, wouldn't you just redate it for like later in the year if you thought it was already going to be?
My feeling from that, and again, I have no insider knowledge, is that when Bong Joon-ho says this movie's not ready and you say, well, when is it going to be ready? And he's like, I don't know. You just say, okay, we'll wait. You know, right? Like, and so I don't know that maybe it would look better if they just undate it, wait for a more firm date, stick to it, versus perhaps pushing this to like August or July and then having to push it again. So that's just my thought, but I guess we'll see.
I hope that's the case.
Yeah. All right, guys. I think we're done talking about films. How about we end this discussion and we come back in a little bit with another episode where we talk about TV.
All right.
Hooray.
And read our, 100 most anticipated films of 2024 list, because it's got a lot of shit in here that's in depth, and people cite it a lot as a sort of invaluable tool that people check all year.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially because you want to, you know, we know you guys are here to for us to talk about Joker 2 or The Fall Guy. So, you know,
All right. I'm still in for those.
For sure. But like, yeah, you can get all that on that list. We could cover pretty much. It's super comprehensive. You'll get the entire year. But this is sort of like what we're drilling down into and being like really, really interested in.
Yeah, look, kind of like storylines to keep an eye on as we go through 2024.
But I'm shocked you didn't bring up The Strangers, by the way, because I know you're a huge Stranger.
I just don't want you guys to brag on me. I figured like if I'm going to talk about Maxine and Rebel Ridge and Speak No Evil, and then I'm like, oh yeah, Roadhouse and The Strangers, you guys be like, oh, why do you even work at this website? Go home.
Which one is The Strangers?
I don't even say it. Renny Harlin, who everybody loves and has never done anything bad, has decided to make 3 back-to-back movies on rebooting the Strangers horror franchise. And the reason Mike brings it up is because The Strangers Pray at Night is a movie I will go to the grave defending. And it's fantastic. I just talked about this with my wife like last week. We were talking about famous pool scenes, and I said, well, you gotta talk about Strangers Pray at Night. But yeah. Yeah.
And Night Swim, you know.
Let me ask you guys some quick question about before we wrap up. What do you guys think is gonna be? Name 3 films that you think are gonna be the biggest of the year.
Oh wow, Deadpool 3. Sure. I think it's Marvel proof, quote unquote. I think all this drama, it's not going to matter. I think, I would say Dune is for sure going to be a big movie. And then, here's what I'll say. I don't think there's another Barbie coming. So I think we'd be bored, right? Like Joker 2, maybe.
Yeah. Joker 2. I mean, the first one did really, really well.
The first one did really, really well. But do you think like that was a phenomenon and a moment in time? Do you think that repeated? I don't know if it can.
Lady Gaga, though, I think there's now a curiosity factor where they're like, what, especially if it comes out that this really has like musical numbers and shit. Like, I don't know. It could be cool. Planet of the Apes could be great. And catch on. And then you have things like Furiosa, which is, are people ready for another Mad Max movie? It's already been what, like 10 years since the other one
built up, and it's such a thing, but remember
Fury Road has a huge fandom.
That Fury Road is still like, was never a gigantic hit. Right.
Right. Right. I think the clear winner of the year is Deadpool 3. As far as box office, I think they would really have to fumble for this movie to do less than like 800 million. But
all right, then let me ask you this, because I think this is a weird year because there's no, like, that's the other thing we should think about this year. There's not a lot of superhero movies. I mean, well, there's 3 Spider-Man Sony movies, but they're going to tank.
I was like, Craven, it's funny because you mentioned there are 3 Sony ones, and I'm like, what are they? And holy shit, yeah, I've already erased them from my mind. Madam Web, oh, come on. Nobody's watching that movie. Craven the Hunter, nobody's watching that movie.
So there's 3 of those.
And then Venom 3, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so like, if you think Deadpool's going to do.
Honestly, I would say any other year, it would be a $1 billion movie guaranteed. I just don't know if.
R-rated, man.
Yeah. So is Joker. You know, like Deadpool, the other 2 have done like 800 something million. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think this one is going to, because of the rumors and the set photos and the Wolverine and all that. Like, I think this is. Typically in any other, you know, world, this would be a $1 billion movie, but with the Marvel,
what comes close then? Like what
else comes close?
Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think people do love Gladiator. Shot. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, movies that like bros specifically are like, you know, that's that movie hit me hard, you know, and I could see it being big. I don't know.
Versus Kong could be big.
No,
that's right. I mean, that they do have a really big like fan base, and the last one somehow made a ton of money. So you know,
are we ready for Neon Pink Godzilla with what was it? Baby,
I didn't say
Baby
I
Kong.
Was a fan.
Come on, I think that movie's gonna be a wet fart of a movie. Nobody's gonna. Yeah.
So we're the last 2.
No, I mean, like, just with people. I think it's like the Transformers effect, right? Where you can only release bad movies so much before people are like, okay, we're done.
Yeah. There's another one I was surprised I didn't see on your list is Transformers 1.
I'm not 100% sure that's coming out this year. Is it? Like, I don't know.
I thought it had a summer release date.
Yeah.
Does
it? It's got a September release date now.
I mean, yeah. Mike knows I'm a sucker. I'm in the bag for an animated Transformers movie. So
that's not, yeah. I don't know when that got moved to September, but you know what else could be big is if you look at like the whole list of like what could be big next year, something like Beetlejuice 2.
No.
I think there's going to be stuff that's going to be really obvious, like Beetlejuice 2, Despicable Me 4.
Okay. Like, well, I didn't know there was a new Minions movie. That's going to do a billion.
That'll do well.
Untitled fourth Bad Boys movie, Inside Out number 2. Garfield could be like maybe like this year's Super Mario Brothers or something. I don't know, maybe.
We're done with Chris Pratt, right?
Is this the year we finally tell Chris Pratt to turn go it away. Down?
And you got a Barry Jenkins directed Lion King live action movie.
Mufasa? Is it Mufasa?
Yeah, yep. Mufasa.
Lion King, which is December 20th. Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
Oh, okay. My boys December. Are excited for that.
Kids are all about that, man. A Karate Kid movie in December.
Well, Karate Kid, that's just nostalgia. I don't think that's going to be huge.
Look at Cobra Kai, though, man.
Cobra Kai is not huge. It's popular, but it's not like, you know, I don't know if people are going to rearrange their day to go see Karate Kid in theaters.
Not to derail, but I just wanted to, because our listeners are probably like, some people anyhow, were like, well, where's all the hits? You know what I mean? Like, I thought we'd like briefly at least talk about what the year could look like by the end, because we talked about a lot of like, you know, maybe more obscure stuff. And I think, you know,
What I'll say in defense of what we talked about versus what people might have expected is much like what Rodrigo said at the very beginning. We all know what a Sonic the Hedgehog 3 looks like. And for a certain audience, that's wonderful. And for Mike's kids and, you know, that's wonderful. But that doesn't intrigue me all that much I don't get anticipation for that. We're not going to talk about the Sony movies just because with those Spider-Man movies, just because we all kind of, we know that they're not going to do well and they're probably not going to be great.
The only Sony Spider-Man movie we want to talk about got pulled off the schedule. So
which one's that?
Spider-Verse.
Oh yeah. Beyond the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm. Till 2025.
Well, and they don't even have a date for that yet.
Right. Right. And well, I'm not a fan of the Venom movies, but they make a decent amount of money.
The second one did, don't quote me on this, but I think it did markedly worse than the first one.
It did drop, yes.
Yeah.
But I think it still did like maybe in the neighborhood of 500, 600 million.
I think it still did well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
The first one did sort of like Aquaman well. Like in terms of, not as high as that money, but like sort of the unexpected, like did super well in China.
Here you go. Here's all you need to know about Venom 3. Mike, who's directing it? Exactly.
No clue.
Screenwriter who has never directed a film before.
Right. Oh. It's one of those.
Not
where
Andy Serkis.
No, because Andy Serkis did his thing and is like, okay, no. But yeah.
I'm not sure he had a good experience.
But and we'll it's see. Co-written by Tom Hardy.
Well, if you listen to his interviews from Let There Be Carnage, he had a huge hand in that one too.
Well, he's got a story by credit for this. And then the screenwriter wrote it. And
it's his friend, right?
I think so. Well,
I think it's like some woman he worked with on the last one. And she just, and they just sat in a room.
Became friends in the working of them.
Yeah.
And then he was like, well, why don't you just direct it? And then somehow he convinced the studio to like, let someone who's never made a movie do a big blockbuster tentpole.
I'm sure it'll be fantastic.
Is he more or less directing the movie then? I don't know.
Tom Hardy is a fascinating man. I love him in just about everything he's done. All the way back to when I saw him at Bronson and I didn't know who he was.
Oh, yeah.
But who knows? His Venom movies just don't work for me.
My boys love him. Another one of those that my kids are going to drag me to either way. So I'll let you know.
What's the Eminem song? Venom.
Yep. I got to listen to that a lot.
All right, let's wrap it up and let's talk about TV in the next one. So thank you for listening and join us for our part two coming up.